Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of women and men who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello, I'm Bridie. Today I'll be speaking to Leanne from London. Leanne is an entrepreneur, mentor and author who has written blogs for us in the past. She's also the founder of Black Women Rising, a project to increase awareness of breast cancer in BAME communities. Leanne, thank you for joining me today.
Hey.
I wondered if you could start by telling me a bit about when you were first diagnosed.
Yeah, so I was diagnosed on October the 20th, 2016. It was a couple of days after my 31st birthday. And my mum had been diagnosed with breast cancer for the second time 6 months before my own diagnosis. And I just remember being in the waiting room, because by that time I'd kind of plucked up the courage to actually think maybe this wasn't breast cancer. Maybe, you know, these results are going to tell me it was a cyst or whatever, because that was what the talk was. Maybe it was a cyst or something. And I just remember the same consultant that looked after my mum called me into the room, and I think that's where I knew, you know. So I went... I was so not expecting the diagnosis that I actually took along one of my friends and my brother with me, my younger brother, because I just thought, you know, it's not going to be nothing to worry about, nothing serious. And, you know, we sat down and she said, Leanne, you know, she's like, well, I was obviously here with your mum 6 months earlier. And she said, look, I'm just not going to beat around the bush. We found cancer. And those were like the key words. I think that will ingrain in my mind for all time, you know. And from there, I'll just never forget that consultation, because I was in there for probably would have been about 10, 20 minutes. But what I was told in there was the most horrific news I've ever heard. You know, it was, you know, the cancer's not just spread, you know, not just contained in one lump. It's all over the breast. So we're going to have to remove your breast. Because of your age, you know, it's quite rare for somebody to have breast cancer at your age. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to send you for genetic testing. And maybe the best thing for you to do would be to remove both your breasts. You're only young and you haven't started your family yet. You're going to be going through treatment that's probably going to stop your period. So, you know, I'm getting all of this news. And I think the worst thing for me out of that was just that, you know, breast cancer has advanced so much over the years, particularly since your mum's had it, you know, that chemotherapy is not always the way to treat breast cancer. We can do a range of different things. And they said, although we found that your cancer's receptive to an amazing drug called Herceptin, we can't give it to you unless we give you chemo. So, and then, you know, that you might lose your hair. They're very strong drugs. All of this I had to try and take in.
It sounds being really shell-shocked.
And my younger brother sitting there, and my best friend, who just went completely quiet. And I don't actually remember much about after that appointment at all. I just remember that they told me to go and get a blood test done. I don't know how I made it there. And I just don't remember getting home. All I remember was falling to the floor when I got in. And I had to drive home. I just remember falling to the floor when I got in. And it was just a really, really difficult time. I think it was like the worst time I've ever felt after my diagnosis. It's just a week of kind of where you're waiting for those hospital appointments to come through, where they do all this checking for spreading and all that stuff. There was just a week of just, I always say it was a feeling like a black, kind of dark, really awful time. So
it all sounds extremely overwhelming, especially if your mum had just gone through it around the same time as well.
Exactly.
How did your family and friends react?
Everyone was absolutely shell-shocked. I mean, shell-shocked. It was funny because the lump was quite big, and actually you could see it in the skin. Yeah, you could actually see it above the skin. So by that time, so I was going around showing people, like, look, this is what it is. And people were like, no, it's a cyst. You're young. You know, I've danced all my life. I've always done fitness. I've always done that. I've always ate quite healthily, you know, not done anything out of the ordinary, and for, in a way, my body to fail me like that, it was a huge shell shock to me and everybody else. So the reaction was complete and utter shock, really, initially, real big shock. And I think lots of people didn't know what to say, because, you know, I'd just turned 31. you know, I was at the peak of my life, turning 30, was really enjoying myself, enjoying life. And then, bam, you get something like this and you don't expect it.
Mm. You've spoken before, actually, on a blog on our website about how you realise friends and family sort of drifting away during your treatment. Would you mind talking a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. No, it was exactly what it was. You know, I don't sugarcoat it anymore. Before, I used to make up excuses and say, oh, you know, people sort of distanced themselves and maybe they didn't know what to say. But no, that was it. I got diagnosed. There were certain people I still, 2 years post treatment and things, I still haven't had a word from, and people just found it awkward. But again, you know, I speak quite a lot about the cultural taboos and myths amongst the BME community, and doing a bit more research, particularly in the work that I do now with other women who have gone through things like myself, I've noticed I'm not the only one. You know, people don't like talking about cancer. People don't believe that cancer is a black disease. Particularly here was this really healthy 30-year-old girl, full of life and has got cancer. How is that? And maybe people didn't want to feel awkward or whatever, but I found it quite distressing, actually, how much people actually failed to get in contact. And then you got the flip side of that was, you know, it's quite strange because when I actually started to get better, what I found, there was a complete contrast. The people that were really supportive of me, and I won't say all, but some of the people that were really supportive of me when I was ill, when I got better and I started to share my voice and started to do quite high profile things around breast cancer awareness, then they started to distance themselves away. So again, I found it on both ends of the spectrum. And I genuinely think it makes people feel awkward, and it makes people feel, I don't know, it makes people feel away. I don't know, I can't speak for them.
So you're speaking about how other people were feeling, but did you have an idea of how you would feel at the end of treatment? So as you're going through your treatment, were you in your head imagining what would happen at the end of it and how you would be feeling?
No, because obviously you think you get to that milestone, don't you? And I literally had a chemo calendar. I was marking off the days, the weeks, the chemos, everything of treatment. And then you think, and you stay so strong. I think once you get over the initial shock, you stay so strong through treatment because you're like, yeah, you know, once you know that, for me, once I knew that it hadn't spread anywhere else in the body, once I knew, okay, I don't have to cut off my hair because I chose to cut off my hair when it started falling out after the first chemo. Once I'd taken control over those things, I was like, right, I can do this. So you're staying strong through each chemo, aren't you? From chemo to chemo, from treatment to treatment. And that's exactly what I did. And so when I got the all clear on June the 29th, 2017, I did not know how to feel. I honestly didn't. I walked out. I was ecstatic. Everybody was like, oh my God, amazing, amazing, amazing. But I didn't understand the magnitude of how awful I would feel after that time. And it wasn't that I wasn't thankful for the all clear diagnosis, of the all clear, you know, results. That was, come on, that's like the best news I've ever heard, the worst news I ever heard, and then I got the best news. I just couldn't make sense of it at first. I was like, am I normal for feeling this way? Am I normal for feeling so depressed after going through all of that? And obviously since that time I've realized that I wasn't, but at the time before I reached out for help, it took me a good couple of months.
Do you think that there was a lack of support on offer to you because you are a black woman? Did you feel that there wasn't really a community who related to you in that way?
I'm quite a person that has been involved in, you know, building communities from the beginning of my career. Do you know what I mean? At 15 years old, that's been my focus about building communities. So I was good at building a small network of women in the hospital that we exchanged numbers and we were helping each other. I'm chatty, I can talk, I'm good at, you know, sort of making friends. Others are not. And I kind of took that kind of role, buddying up with people, getting us all to talk and stuff like that. But in terms of the hospital themselves, what I will say is I am very thankful to the NHS for everything they've done. But what I found in the hospitals was that there was not enough support being given. Also, not enough referrals to services such as yourself. You know, you have actually been hands down the best service I have found since going through my diagnosis. And I absolutely wish you were there from the beginning. But the hospital's not talking about you guys. Yes, you've got your leaflets about and things like that. But what about people? We're too traumatized to read leaflets. We're too traumatized to even go and research, you know, places that we can go to for help. We need those people that are meant to be our care givers in the hospitals to say, listen, I think you should do this service. I think you should go to this. I think you should go to that. There wasn't any of that. It was only when I remember starting feeling really bad that I went back to the hospital and I said, I feel really, really depressed. Oh, it's completely normal, you know, here's a couple of places that you might be able to go, but these places were not anywhere near my home. I was still very self-conscious about the weight I'd put on. I was still doing other treatments, not chemo, but I was still in other treatments. I was still weak. I couldn't go to these other places they were telling me. I didn't know that there was places on my doorstep, places that I could call up for advice. I didn't know that. And it took for me to say, okay, well, it looks like I'm going to have to aid my own recovery. And I released the blogs that I was writing throughout my treatment. And when I got a massive outpouring of women that contacted me, and the overwhelming amount of BME women that contacted me, that I realized, wow, everyone's kind of echoing the same thing. One of the, you know, there's two things that really upset me that I heard. I've heard many stories about things from the BME community about sort of the things they've had to go through cancer. Not only are you going through the cancer and the treatment, but you're being told things like, well, you know, you haven't caught it from any of us. I don't know where you've caught your cancer from. Okay, that really upset me when I was told that by one of the ladies. In my own experience, you know, being told, okay, well, you get a free wig because you've lost your hair. And wigs can be very expensive. And so I was excited to go and walk into this centre to go and get a free wig. And they said, oh, you can pick any one from that magazine. And I remember going, where's the ethnic section? And there was like four pages in this huge magazine. Oh, but those are all sold out. So we can only offer you one from another section. You can try them on. And I was like, wow. So you're going to insult us by not even having anything that even matches our hair type. And actually say that that's okay. It's awful. So that's when I knew that there was inadequate support. It's funny because in my own life and in my own home life, I had, you know, quite a lot of support. I didn't really look at it as a thing of race. But actually what I found is by me talking about it, I've automatically become a spokesperson for these women. So I am going to make it about race because this is what I'm being told. And actually, the more my eyes have been opened, I can see it quite clearly. But then at the same time, because of the cultural myths and taboos that are happening, these women and men within our communities are less likely, and the NHS have written this, it's a fact, they're less likely to give the right information at the end of their treatment. So how can they make these services tailored for them if they're not giving feedback at the end? I think it's got to work both ways. So, you know, a lot of my work that I do now is about trying to kind of bridge that gap, get people talking more, get the services listening more, you know, and making it easier so that we can build our services so that people don't feel traumatized, you know, years after treatment. You know, I felt like that a couple of months after treatment and then actually went out and got help. I've met women years, decades on from treatment, still suffering. And mentally, because they're suffering, physically, they're still suffering and not knowing where to go, you know. So, yeah, it's been insightful.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, this has all led to what we're mainly going to talk about now, which is your Black Women Rising project, which is absolutely incredible.
Thank you.
I wondered if you wouldn't mind explaining a bit about what the project is and how the stuff that we've just discussed about not having the support led you to start up this project.
Well, the idea of Black Women Rising came from two things, really. Meeting all those women and actually them asking me for advice, which actually I was in no position to really give because everybody's so different than each other, you know, and a lot of our treatment plans are so different. I couldn't ever possibly provide them with everything they needed. But what I did find was some common ground in that these women wanted to talk. So I knew that there had to be some sort of meet-up sort of group that needed to happen. And I remember putting my first meetup group, and I remember not excluding any race. And actually the women that actually signed up for this meetup dinner that we did, that I managed to get funding to pay for and stuff, were all women, BME women that came and signed up for it. And then from there, I decided to do more groups. So I put on another group, and we only had 12 spaces. We had ended up having 14 ladies, which was fantastic. And I kind of got the idea from there. I was also struggling with my body image, which I know I've spoken about in blogs, one of the blogs on your site before. And I asked, you know, somebody in my office, would they they're a professional photographer. And I said, would you take a picture of my scars? I just want to come to terms with them. I actually want to just see what they look like and actually embrace them. And so she'd done a test shot of me and one of my other friends who I met whilst going through my chemo. And she took a picture of both of us. We didn't expect them to come out. And she just shot them beautifully in black and white. And she presented them to me. And I was like, wow, these are powerful. They were strong. They told us stories. And I just said, imagine if we could get a bunch of ladies to do this. Because they were our intimate cancer scars. I thought that's quite a bit of a shock horror anyway, but being from the BME community where these things are frowned upon or where these things are, you know, not done often, I thought, wow, this could be even more powerful. Maybe this will start some much needed conversation. And so I set about it. I was like, okay, what I want is I want 8 women, 8 portraits, 8 stories. That was my kind of tagline. And I'm looking for 8 women. And I really thought, I don't know, I'm going to do this. It's going to be hard. Because I know a lot of the women that were in the groups or that I met, they might not do it. And you know what? It's so weird. Everyone signed up for it, including my mum, who first breast cancer was 26 years ago. Second breast cancer was 6 months before me. And in that time, had never spoken about her cancer. She even agreed to do it. And she's had like a double mastectomy, no reconstruction. It was just the most amazing thing to kind of have her on board. And agree to this. And I think that gave me the uplift that I needed. I was like, if my mum's involved, it's not going to be hard for me to get other women that are going to want to tell their stories. And that 8 women turned into 14 with a waiting list, you know. And so the whole idea now, so we shot these 14 women over a weekend, which was an amazing weekend. A lot of women said that it made them feel liberated, made them feel free. We got makeup artists in, we kind of pampered them for the day. It was just so nice. It was a wonderful, wonderful weekend, so insightful. And I was like, right, there's a couple things with this exhibition. So it's called Black Women Rising. It's called, with a tagline called The Untold Cancer Stories. And it will consist of 14 women, 14 portraits, and 14 stories. So those stories will be told by a live panel talk. And what we want to do with this exhibition is we want to take the exhibition. We're not just going to have it in March 2019 and then say, okay, well, that's it. Actually, the idea is to preview it. So what people are going to see in March is actually a preview of this exhibition and what it could be, you know. We don't have the money or the resources to blow the pictures up humongous or make it like a, you know, a professional art gallery. We don't have that resources yet. But what we've got is we've got enough to do an amazing preview of what it could be on a huge on a huge scale. And, you know, it's so funny because it's such an organic project. We'd had no money, we have no resources. But what people have been able to do for us in kind has been amazing for all of us, and you know, all of us ladies who are involved, to see, you know, the outpouring of support from the communities has been amazing. And what we want to do with this exhibition is go on tour and take this exhibition into the communities and, you know, get into places where people can come and ask questions, you know. We released the tickets and we released the exhibition dates on World Cancer Day, which was the 4th of February. By the end of February, we'd sold out of our initial tickets that were put online. okay? So we had to release a few more. And so now we're 75%. I haven't checked in the last week, but about 75% sold out of tickets, which is amazing because for us, you know, we're a month ahead of the event and whatever. But I've had just the most wonderful conversations with people, particularly women who have had cancer. They've contacted me. They've said, wow, I can't believe you're doing this. If you need me to do the next one, I'll get involved. We need this. I'm coming. And for me, I've really, really, that for me is like, well, that's why I've done this. Another reason why I've done this as well is not just to give awareness and actually create some much needed conversation about cancer amongst the BME community, but also for these women, the process of this exhibition, the process of the group has aided their recovery. It's aided my recovery as well. So it's the process of what we're doing, showcasing, getting them to tell their stories, is exactly the reason why an exhibition and why this sort of awareness needs to exist. Because for some reason, these women haven't been able to talk. For some reason, they feel so isolated in their communities, they're not being able to share their stories. But by giving them this platform, look, some of them, you know, I ran a group on Saturday, some of them turned up. I said to some of them, you're like different people. Because going through this process, even talking to you guys, because obviously they're writing blogs with you guys, they're sharing their story, they're talking. And this is what we're trying to say. This stuff needs to happen more. So it's not just from the awareness point of you check your breasts and whatever and take care of yourself and stuff like that. And you're not a hypochondriac if you feel aches and pains and whatever and go and get it checked out. Go and do it. But also of the flip side of it, if you are diagnosed, here is support, resources and help to get you through it. But also after, if you're living with a terminal diagnosis, for example, we have two women on our, in the exhibition that have terminal cancer diagnosis. So it's great to hear their story and how they live with it. But then we've also got, you know, the rest of them are survivors. And you know what the constant worry is when you're a survivor. Is my cancer going to return? So we're covering all bases. And that's what I wanted the exhibition to be about.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. As Thank Leanne you. Mentioned, we are featuring quite a few stories from women who are in yeah. the exhibition, which is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, so excited to see.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you as a final point, you mentioned that the project has helped you in your recovery.
Yeah.
Is it helping you move forward? Do you think it's helping you deal with some of the things that you didn't have time to in the whirlwind and being overwhelmed during your treatment?
Do you know what? It has really helped me. Connecting with the other ladies, of course, we're sharing stories, we're realising some similarities with the way we've been treated by others, the actual drugs and what it's done to us, the after effects, 2 years on after treatment. Are we still having the same aches and pains? Yes, we are. It's really helped in that sense, you know. And actually just having some common ground, do you know what I mean? But also for me, like I said, my whole focus from a very young age with my work has always been about communities and bringing communities together and stuff like that. And I feel like this has kind of suited really well into my everyday work because it's brought women, you know, at the forefront of and BME women, and I'm going to put it straight, black women at the forefront of a conversation that usually sees them excluded. And I'm very, very happy that I've been able to kind of provide that platform for that to happen. And it's great because it's black women rising. The focus is on black women that have had cancer. But because we know cancer doesn't exclude. And the exhibition is not to exclude anybody. We've got a wonderful mix of people coming. We've got nurses coming, you know, dealing with all different types of care and stuff like that, saying they're coming to listen to the stories because they understand and they get the point, what we're trying to make. We've got a wonderful outpouring from all different types of people coming. So, and that's what we want, the support, the reality, but the support. You know, and the understanding of what we're trying to do here, and it's not to divide races and things like that. Hell no. Cancer does not exclude in any shape or form, but what we're going to is a minority group of people who, like I said, have felt excluded from a conversation and also have lived in isolation with their diagnoses and their treatment and just need some assistance and guidance and help in making it a bigger thing in their community. And that's great that we've started this conversation.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today, Leanne.
No, thank you.
So the Black Women Rising exhibition will be previewing on the 28th of March at Copeland Gallery in Peckham, and free tickets are available on Eventbrite, 75%, but there is still some left.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.